Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macklitz. If my voice is a little off, I'm on the road right now. I mean, I'm not on the road. I'm just not at home, and I forgot my microphone. But Bob, you can hear me. I can hear you. Happy Easter weekend.
Thank you very much, Matthew. I appreciate that. To you and yours as well. We made the agreement that we would try to do two a week with all the sports going towards playoffs again.
Yep.
And with baseball starting up. And so the only way to do it is to do it. So here we are, the Good Friday edition. But it's going to be a quickie today, right?
Yeah, I'm not at home, and just schedule's a little all wonky and stuff. I'm just doing the only real Easter thing I'm doing today. So,
are you on the air today?
I am. I'm on air 2 to 4, TSN 1050.
I hear it's a good show.
Yeah, you know, every now and then. My opening thought today, Bob, is actually a rarity. It's a real sporty one.
Okay, let's hear it. Debut it, if you don't mind.
The Maple Leafs' defense is elite.
Ooh, hot take.
And well, it's more to the point that everyone needs, like, it's funny. I don't think we see what's in front of us until too late. When you look at the personnel, the system, and the fact that, you know, they're 10th in goals against, and think about how many games they've had Hutchison or Campbell. Like, they've had three goalies. They've played Edmonton 9 times, and yet they're still 10th in goals allowed. It's a pretty incredible feat when you consider, you know, they're just not getting elite goaltending. That's in it in a nutshell.
That's a very interesting take, and it is a pretty hot take. Okay, so I'm going to require you to sharpen it a bit. Not because I'm trying to disprove it. It's just like I want some parameters. So statistically, how good do you have to be considered elite? Top 5?
Yeah, I would say top 5, but as long as you put every statistic in its proper context. Toronto has faced more high-end offenses than most other teams. They've played Connor McDavid 9 times. Nine times. and yet, despite that, they're 10th in goals given up.
Can you be an elite defense without an elite defender? I think the answer is yes, isn't it?
Well,
thinking back to those 93 Leafs, and they didn't have one defenseman who was amazing, but they had 6 who were really good.
And by the way, that's what the Leafs have. Consider Zach Bogosian is probably overqualified. He's playing far fewer minutes with Toronto than he did with the Lightning. The Lightning needed him more than Toronto does. He's on the third line with Travis Dermott. You've got the shutdown line. You've got Brody and Riley. And yep, Riley defensively sometimes leaves you a little bit wanting for more, but he's aggressive. He helps on offense. And TJ Brody's been really good.
Riley in context is better now that he has a partner that stabilizes things for sure. Hall and Muzzin, we talked about this the other day. We like the Leafs' chances in the playoffs because they have a legit number one line. They have a legit number one shutdown pair. And they've got 2 really good centers, if we consider Tavares still a really good center. So, yeah, I have to wrap my brain around this because I've been complaining about the defense for so long. Is it possible that not only are they okay, but they're really
damn good. And the thing is Marner might even be a better defensive forward than Matthews or Tavares, and he's smaller than either of them. Then you've got Zach Hyman, who's really a responsible player. Jason Spezza is doing much more in defense. So the forwards as well. Yeah, sort of gets to my point. We've spent so long complaining about the Leafs' defense that it's actually good, and we don't know what to do with ourselves.
So here's the thing, and you raised, this is my instinctive answer to your point, is I don't know if the 6 defensemen or the 7 defensemen that they dress at any given time are elite themselves, but their best players, and by that I mean their forwards, have committed to playing more defensively. And yeah, you make a good point because the goaltending has let them down, but the forwards are better than they used to be in terms of getting back, starting with Matthews, but clearly Tavares has been tasked by Keefe to just be a bear defensively and not worry so much about goals, put himself in a position to prevent goals, you know. And, you know, Hyman's been terrific just up and down the line, smart, good players playing hard. So, okay, I'm going to go with you on this one. Yeah. I feel like I need some time to really think about it because I haven't, you know, I've spent so little time watching the American teams that I can't tell if my answers are just the ones I'm used to having. Who is actually better than the Leafs? Like, I'm, you know, I always say, oh, Tampa Bay's better. But I haven't watched Tampa Bay play much this year. Like, it's all Canadian teams all the time.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, I'm just looking at it. It's like, okay, they played Winnipeg 5 times. Winnipeg is also a top 10 offense. Edmonton, Winnipeg is 6th in goals scored. Edmonton is 8th in goals scored. Those teams, especially Edmonton, would be far higher. If you get rid of the games against the Leafs, Edmonton's like a top 5 offensive team in the league. So you have to throw that in as well. And also, Bob, and this is my final thought because we can move on. It's getting really sporty here. But if you go back and look at the last 10 years, the Leafs' average in terms of goals against is about like 22nd in the league. They've been bad for really long that we're not used to this.
So let's transition then to my hot take.
Yeah.
Which is, given the Leafs goaltending situation, we talked about this a lot last time. I'm starting to upgrade to it's incumbent upon Kyle Dubas to make some kind of move. He doesn't have to make a move for a replacement for Freddie or Jack Campbell, but he has to have a better third than Michael Hutchinson. And it's actually their number one need. And if he doesn't do it now, I don't think he failed to upgrade the team. I think he failed to prepare the team to go to the playoffs.
I would agree with that because let's look at Freddie and Jack. Freddie Anderson is having the worst statistical season of his career when he's had the most help of his career. Lower body injuries that's lingering, and they say they brought him back too soon. So they're doing the smart thing. They're taking longer. But then he's talked about issues with confidence this year. We've seen what he's like in game 7s of the playoffs. And then you've got Jack Campbell, who just can't stay healthy. Wonderful fella. Played very well. He's 7-0. It's all lovely. But, you know, you don't want to be wasting these early prime years of Matthews and Marner.
I've been texting with a member of Leafs Nation, I guess, on the media side recently. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you're texting, it forces you to sharpen your thoughts because you don't want to go on and on about it like we do on this pod.
And
what I wrote was, I looked at it, I thought, well, that's true. I said, right now there's two clocks that Dubas should be hearing. One is the one that rings when Matthews' deal expires. That's the one that feels like the natural window. But the second clock is how long will Tavares be an effective top six performer? And that one is ticking louder.
Yep.
I think that it's a 2-year window of him being a legit top six guy before the attrition, just based on what we're seeing over the last couple of years. If it trends this way, by the get two more, like this season and the next, how much are you going to count on this guy? And because his salary, you know, eats up so much of the cap space, you know, it's hard to just bolster it. Like, we all know these things. But my point is to go back to the goaltending situation. Man, you don't work this hard to put yourself in a position to be this close and then start getting cheap on prospects and picks.
Oh, yeah.
I hear people all the time say, you know, I almost feel like we've been conditioned because of the rebuild to go, oh, you know, prospects and picks, that's the most important thing. Not anymore. Now they're just assets to get you that one good player that can put you in a legitimate chance to win. You know me, I've been the wait and see guy. This is no longer wait and see time. This is go time.
100%. And look at it with the Raptors. They were full go time. They won a championship. Who the Raptors just play? OKC. Maybe it'll work out. They got all these draft picks. It's great for selling hope, but there's nothing tangible about it. So, yes, Nick Robertson, Liljegren, whoever, love you there, buddy. But if Toronto can get a tangible piece that can help them in the playoff run this year, bye-bye.
This is an interesting thing for the analytics crowd to contend with, because sometimes a deal on paper doesn't feel like a good deal for the team because you've given up too much. And I hear this all the time. Well, you can't give up too much to get somebody unless they get you to a conference final or the final itself. You know, then it was worth it because you didn't store Nick Robertson so that you could be competitive for 7 years. You got those guys and you got everybody on your team. There's only one point to sports. Win a championship. That's the point of being in a league. You're there to win the championship. You know, you're not there to get the participant ribbon. So, you know, I think some of Leafs Twitter has to sort of stand down a little bit on the value of the picks. Like, also picks, like, in the upcoming year, like, or even two, because of COVID. Who the hell knows how to scout these kids? Who the hell knows who's really a first rounder or a third rounder? We haven't watched them play.
And also, they haven't played.
That's you the, know, that's
the quality of players overall, how can it not take a bit of a hit? It's nothing against them, but they're not training. They're not working out. They're not playing games. Their development curve is getting stunted.
You know, on these matters, I always defer to Merrick because he knows so much about, you know, hockey. And I said, what's more likely? Someone gets a steal in the first round or someone gets a steal in the middle rounds? And he was like, honestly, both. Like, all bets are off. Nobody really knows what's going on. So if you're flipping first round picks, it's not like you can count on it to be a certain thing. You can't. You might as well have the third round pick. You might find gold. And you could easily crap out on that first rounder because you just don't have the scouting charts on these guys. So I'm all in. Like, I obviously think goaltending is the most important. But if it is Taylor Hall and it doesn't work out, so what? You know?
Yeah.
You went for it. That's the whole point. To get yourself in a position to go for it.
And this city is fine with that. I mean, we saw Kawhi. We're good with it. And by the way, Bob, quick diversion.
Yeah.
Jeff Merrick needs to gain 10 pounds. He's the only guy who is constantly getting skinnier during COVID. And two, you've got more political friends than I do. Bob, I need you to go talk to Doug and get him to end this lockdown for one reason. I don't care about variants, spikes, hospitals, the elderly. I don't care about any of them. I only care about one thing. Elliot Friedman needs a haircut. He needs a haircut right now. We cannot let this wait any longer.
Can't, like, somebody just cut it while he's sleeping?
Yeah. I mean, just put someone in a hazmat suit, get some scissors and an electric shaver. We got to get this done. That hair is just giant.
I don't understand how come some people on TV look groomed and some don't.
Yeah.
And do the bosses have the ability to force you to get a haircut now? Or is
they can't. No.
You feel like they should be able to, though. It's still a visual medium. I mean, Merrick looks good, doesn't he? He could grow his hair long. His hair grows. He looks like he shaves, though.
I feel he'd be skinny. I feel he'd have skinny hair, just like the rest of them.
Jeff's always been wiry.
Yeah.
Jeff's always been strong but wiry. He works out a lot. He lifts weights. He does all that stuff.
Don't need to tell me the "he works out a lot" sentence. I did the math.
Fair enough. He's always worked out a lot. He's really athletic.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah. When we used to wrestle as kids, they were good matches. He was always a little bit stronger. I don't think he was as ready to cheat as I was.
Yeah.
So they were usually pretty even scraps. My poor mother, to this day, I think that if you gave her truth serum, she would say she still believes Jeff and I wrestle when we get together. But she was privy to some of the most outrageous brawls of all time. Do you remember the Family Guy episode where Peter fights the chicken?
Yes.
That was me and Jeff at 15 years old.
So you're in your basement, you're in your living room, you're in a ravine, and then suddenly you're on an early World War II Nazi biplane trying to avoid the propeller.
Right, and then we're on top of a train. We actually created a game where we would get a Nerf football, and then we'd go on down to the local lawn bowling space or whatever you call it, field, I don't know, pitch, whatever. And you would think, oh, so you go throw the ball around? Not exactly. Someone would throw the ball, and the goal was to try to retrieve it and stop the other guy from retrieving it. So we would beat the shit out of each other until one person could finally get up and retrieve the ball. And you can throw a ball pretty far. So, like, it would take sometimes 10, 15 minutes to retrieve the ball with all the beatings that went on. We'd play to five.
It's, God, those games. We all had, like, our versions of those, like Red Ass and... Just 12-year-old boys are just stupid.
So stupid. Two words, man. Two words explain 12-year-old boys. Backyard wrestling.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Oh, there we go. Oh,
there's your phone. There's your phone.
Yep. Sorry about that, Matt. Not really.
No.
How are you taking the news about the lockdown that isn't a lockdown, the shutdown that shuts nothing down, that are dangerous, but everybody still do what you're doing, but don't do what you're doing.
I learned a long time ago, and I can do this. I don't have children. I don't have connections with schools. I'm not currently looking after someone who's elderly, and I'm not a frontline worker. I'm on the sidelines. I read it all. I watch it all. And I just kind of stay quiet and just stay in my corner and, you know, wash my hands and wear a mask. I went to one of my favorite local places yesterday and sat on their patio and ordered a drink and ordered some food because I felt bad for them because I feel so bad for the restaurants. I feel bad for the suppliers, the farmers, everyone that touches a restaurant is again getting impacted by this. I'm not sitting here saying it was a mistake and everything should be opened and let's go full Dallas, Texas, but I'm certainly bummed out by it.
We're all bummed out by it. I think for my own sense of sanity, the decision to not tweet during Lent was a smart one. There are so many times I have cracked open my laptop and got, you know, get ready, shake my fingers a little bit to start typing 240 characters. And I thought, nope, I made a promise. I'm not going to do it. And I haven't. I'm still trying to figure out everything. And I've succeeded at none of it. I do know this.
Yeah.
That I officially feel like, do you know how families in the States started to have real problems because Trump supporters in the families would fight with the non-Trump supporters?
Yes.
I don't feel like we've really had that in Canada to the same extent. But if this fuckery goes on much longer here, I think you're going to start to see families have infighting because of just different ways of trying to manage this. You know, like it's going to get escalated even more as people get more and more tired. Why aren't you coming to visit me? Why aren't you doing like all these things? I have a bad feeling. Let's just get to the summer and you know, with the fewest number of casualties.
The key to it, and again, it's easier for me to do this with my lifestyle. So I am not patting myself on the back, nor am I saying everyone should be like me because it's hard to do it.
They should.
We've
discussed many times on the pod.
Yeah, everyone should be, but I get why people can't. Is that I am at peace with inconsistency, not from the government, but I'm talking about my friends and family. You know, when I hear about, oh, they're doing this. Oh, but they're doing this. Well, why aren't they doing that? Oh, they're getting upset at me because I visited Amy's parent. Oh, but they're doing this. Wait, what about that? Oh, they're inside. Are they like, oh, so they're now tough. Oh, now they're being soft and everything in between. I just, again, I sit to the side. And I accept inconsistency because we're not living in the world we're living in right now makes it difficult to be consistent.
Do you remember in The Simpsons when Kodos ran for president?
Yep.
We must go upwards, not downwards, backwards, not forward, and forever twirling, twirling towards freedom. That was Doug Ford's message the other day.
Yes, it was.
I didn't feel bad for him in the sense that he's an elected official and this is his job and it's an important job and he chose to do it. I didn't feel bad for that, but I did have a certain degree of empathy when he answered the very, very reasonable and damning question, stay tuned. It was like just a man completely melting under the French fry lamp.
Stay tuned.
I don't know what to say. Stay tuned.
Yeah, you're not, you know, you're not the local news. You're not,
I think he didn't know what else to say. I mean, he was frozen. You remember that time when Trudeau got asked something about Trump and the States and it took like, I think it was like 23 seconds to answer. There was that huge long pause.
Yes, yes.
It was either going to be stay tuned or that, where you just don't know how to say something that sounds true because the truth sounds so bad.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's more should have been done. But part of the debate is always, would we as a society be okay with a month-long draconian-styled lockdown? But the problem with that sort of lockdown is it would require tons of police and the army. Like, to truly get a 100% lockdown, that requires a show of force that we are not comfortable with, and that is not part of who we are as a society.
I don't think that was true in New Zealand, but New Zealand's an island, so
exactly. I can't include a place that has the population of Mississauga that's in the corner of the world. I love what they're doing, and their spirit is great, but they were in such a position to succeed.
I don't know if you would need the draconian measures that you suggest to the degree that you would suggest them, but clearly our system is built around the idea of individual freedoms. Maybe not as much as the states is, clearly not as much as the states is, but we value personal freedoms in our culture. And this is a time where you have to willingly give them up. And as soon as a bunch of people aren't, for good or bad reasons, it doesn't work. That's just not how the science works, which is your point. You're either all in, whether you like it or not, or this is what you get. The only thing that really bugs me is I get bugged when people talk about what about the economy? And I feel so terrible for the small business owner, but I also feel like this government hasn't protected the small business owner. They've been busy protecting big business. And people have pointed out the enormous inconsistencies between what gets closed and what doesn't. I mean, God, if I read one more heartbreaking tweet about someone who says, my shop's in trouble, why is Costco open? I can do that. I can, or when I read about how there's almost 1,000 cases of COVID that have been connected to Amazon warehouses, but other places are forced to shut down because they might get one. These inconsistencies are clearly built for big business to continue, for the supply chain to continue. There's reasons for that, but some of them are bad reasons. I think what it really comes down to, and this is nonpartisan, I've actually liked some of the stuff Aaron O'Toole has tried to do, and I feel bad that he's inherited a party that isn't looking to govern. He's inherited a base that's looking to just break stuff. The Doug Ford, the defenders of Doug Ford, I don't think they have any reason to defend him in terms of his plans. Oh, wow. I just got another text.
I know.
I guess you knew that.
Yeah.
Anyway, probably good. I've got about 20 weeks worth of tweets stored up, so it's good to shut me up. I can sum it up in 140 characters.
Yeah.
People are supporting him because they're mad at somebody else, which is it's like dating someone because you're mad at your ex. It doesn't mean you're in a good relationship. It just means that you're getting your satisfaction for bad reasons.
It's, put it this way, it's not going to end well.
No, and it never does. Why do you like Doug Ford? I hate everybody else. Oh, okay. Well, that's a reason, I guess.
That's part of the reason Biden got in.
Well, there's no question that's, don't get me started on Biden. Okay, we should talk Jays. How much of the game did you watch? You watch all of it?
I had it on mute because it was on during my show. It checked every box. Vlad had a bunch of hits and got on base a bunch of times on Garrett Cole. Ryu looked good. Bullpen looked good. And they beat the Yankees.
I got to tell you, I didn't watch the whole thing because, it was on during the day. And, it's really, I tried to do the Twitter, the information gap where you don't find out anything about the afternoon game. It's hard though, especially during a pandemic. I was online trying to find out all I could about COVID and nothing about the Jays. It was hard to do. I did not succeed, but I watched a bunch of the game knowing the outcome already. And I watched Vladdy's first at bat. Holy jumping Jehoshaphat. He hit a screamer off of Cole. God, it was a great swing.
Yeah. And he got a, good plate discipline. It was good to see, But Bob, here's the weird thing. Baseball is weird in the sense that I think fans get more excited when their team wins game one in baseball than they do in basketball or hockey. And there's 161 more.
That is such a good point. The disparity between the way you feel and the reality of that feeling, what it means, the consequences, wow, almost zip. There's one trend I think we all want to continue, though. If I could pick one trend, obviously the bullpen delivering, that's great. Vladdy with the great swing, that's awesome. Man, it was nice to watch them play defense, buddy.
Yes.
Biggio executing the double play or the throw home. These moments, I was so happy. They would have lost that game four different times yesterday because of defense last year.
You're right. Biggio was great. Simeon was great. Vlad, you know, was doing a good job of hoovering up balls at first. Yeah, you know what it is? Part of it is it's just a pleasure to watch athleticism. In a game that had like 36 strikeouts or something, it's nice to see athleticism.
You know, that's a good poll question for you. Which trend would you most want to see continue? Good defense, big year for Ryu, hot stroke for Vlad.
Yeah, I could do that. Or in honor of Easter, what do you prefer? Giant novelty size chocolate bunny that's hollow, or smaller chocolate bunny that's solid?
Okay. I've only got 3 minutes, so let's dive in.
I go with novelty large one because there's something evil and delicious about just eating the ears off of a giant bunny.
Nothing beats taking it apart. That's like the song Alouette, where you're just basically breaking pieces off the bird. You know that, right? That's what the theme of Alouette is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Also, this is the dirty secret of Easter chocolate is most of it is garbage. It's chalky. It's Easter chocolate is to real chocolate as baseball card gum is to other desserts. It is just an excuse for chemicals to party together.
You are both 100% right, and I don't care. It is one of, I love cheap East, like, I know I pull off, you know, bougie and fancy fella. I love cheap Easter chocolate. I love it.
Do you know what it is, Easter chocolate? It is the dessert version of when you go to a lousy spaghetti place and you get the bread and you put a big pat of butter on it. And you eat the butter and bread, which you would almost never do at home. Sit there and eat 14 rolls with butter on them. But there's something about that bread and butter at the cheap spaghetti place that is the best thing in the world.
It's a great analogy. I don't remember the last time I just bought a couple rolls, came home and just slathered them with butter and ate them. But I've done it at restaurants every time.
It's a bizarre thing. When was the last time you ever put a basket of bread on the table before having a meal?
It's been a while since since Big Carb got taken down. It's been a long time.
Now, I grew up in a Ukrainian household, so my grandfather would get a stack of a half a loaf of bread and no butter because, you know, he wasn't bougie. It was a stack of rye bread, and it would come out with a bottle of whiskey, garlic, and then either kielbasa or pickles or both.
Yum. And
dudes would go to town. That was dinner.
Oh, yeah. That's a good dinner.
I knocked my computer by accident.
Oh, God. All right, Bob, as you're getting yourself set up again, just a reminder that this podcast is brought to you by our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. If you are looking for a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Bob, before we go, I have one pop culture reference.
Sorry, go ahead. And then I've got something that just occurred to me that's brilliant. Oh, more calls. Sorry.
More what calls. Is your name? You know, by the way, you know what's brilliant? The mute button. I'm going to read you, you'll know the movie in a second, but I'm going to read you the cast of this movie. And just listen to all the stars, okay?
Okay.
Tom Cruise, Gene Hackman, Hal Holbrook, Wilford Brimley, Ed Harris, Holly Hunter, David Stratham, Gary Busey, the star of Saw, and he's got a small role, but Hank, Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, are all in The Firm.
Wow, Wilford Brimley's so good in that.
He is so good.
Cool. Okay, I'm going to do a crossover with you already because I'm about to join my Apple call.
Yep.
So I'm
firing up. That was the only thing that I had for today's call was
hey, guys, to make sure. Blaine, what's up, Bob? Sorry to interrupt. I'm just finishing my pod on the other thing. Hey, Matt, say hi. This is Raquel, Blaine, and Emmy.
Hi, guys. Wait a minute. Who calls Bob boss? Bob, are you the boss?
No, he said Bob. Are you kidding? Get lost.
Oh, my God. Okay.
It's the accent, man.
Yeah. All right. So,
hi, guys.
Apple guys, stay here. Matt, I got to say goodbye.
Okay. Bye, Bob.
Okay. Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.